Hello and welcome to RFN episode 376. I am your host, James Jones. And of course, if I'm sitting here, that means Dr. Metz is out this week. But that's fine because we have, amongst our usual, Mr. John Lindemann.
Yes, I'm here again. Amazingly enough, my uninterrupted string of podcasts continues.
It's like 3 weeks now. We're all very impressed. Mr. Guillaume Veillette.
Hello.
Hello, Guillaume. And filling in this week, we have Miss Kim Keller.
Hello. Again,
it is fantastic to have you here. And with that, actually, I'm not gonna start the episode like Johnny does and go on a monologue. I'm just gonna get right off. and since Kim is our guest, why don't you tell us what you've been playing the last whenever?
Wow.
Recently.
Well, recently I played the Lego Movie video game.
Which version?
The Wii U version.
Okay.
And I had seen the movie like at midnight before, because I'm just that kind of person. And so when a chance to play came up, I grabbed it. It was actually a lot of fun. I mean, I haven't played a lot of the Lego games before. I played the second Batman one. And that might be it, actually.
Well, they're all right. Pretty much.
Yeah,
the same.
So they're pretty much the same thing. So comparing it between the two, I mean, obviously, no, it's the same for all of them. It's not really like crazy unique, but it's fantastic if you love the movie, because they just stick in a ton of like full video clips from the movie. I felt like I was just watching the whole thing again. And then the levels are just extended versions of those scenes. So for example, if there's like a 5 second scene where something's happening, where it's like, oh, this ship is sinking or something, it turns into an entire level where you're like, actually, all this shit went down while that ship was sinking.
Of course. Like, that's standard operating procedure for a lot of movie to video game conversions. We had Tatooine for like half of Super Star Wars. Freaking desert levels forever. And then Dagobah.
It's a big world, Guillaume.
Yeah, right.
But I actually really didn't mind it, though, because they had all the original voice actors come back for it. And it wasn't just like little clips from the movie. It was like, you know, they were all, it basically felt like they just stuck them all in a room and were just like, go, improvise something. And because some of the things they say are just outrageous. And I mean, I laughed out loud. But that was actually my biggest appeal. It was the actors were back and they were just goofing off and making, you know, as Lego does, makes fun of itself. So when, you know, someone's using, for example, I think his name's Vestuvius. I don't know if I'm saying that right. Morgan Freeman's character, his ability is that he has blind faith. He's just not afraid of anything because he can't see it. And just,
so that's pretty
there's
good.
Like fire going over something. There's this tiny little ledge. He's the only one who's going to go for it. And he just constantly is like, I'm just going to go over this perfectly safe bridge. There's nothing going on here. It's not like there's fire or anything. And then everyone else is like, is he really blind? Like, he has to be seeing this, right? So the moments like that really made the game for me.
There's no way that's actually Morgan Freeman voicing.
It really is. Oh my gosh, that guy's crazy. He has a lot of stuff going on. Like, he's on, what, Science Channel with stuff, things. He has comedy things. He's just...
He's like the voice, you know, he is. It's like, we need someone who sounds, you know, smart, but is friendly as well. Let's get Morgan Freeman.
Oh my gosh. And especially like, I don't know if any of you like watched the movie or like watched some of the other stuff, but
sure.
For the movie, they had a lot of like teasers where they talked about the character talked about the actor playing them. And Morgan Freeman's was just the best, where it's just like, keep listening to my silky voice. Just going on like that.
So this is the first Lego game where there's actually things built out of Legos, right? I mean, in the previous Lego games, you had basically the vehicles and the characters, which were made of Legos, and you had some objects that you could interact with, and by interact, I mean just, you know, hold A and they would build stuff. But otherwise, like the setting and like the houses or whatever, the buildings were usually kind of realistic, right?
I mean, it's technically different because you have the whole master builder aspect where, you know, you have to build something completely new out of the environment. But it's kind of the same thing because it's really easy where once you've unlocked all the pieces that you need, like, have access to grab them, you just stand in a circle and then you just highlight, like, 3 to 5 pieces and then it just builds it automatically for you.
Oh, okay.
So it's not crazy different there.
And is it, like, is it hard to find, like, to know which structures you can destroy? Because everything is made out of Legos this time?
No, it's once you step in the green circle, there's outlines around everything. So you already know where it is.
Okay.
Which is a shame. I mean, I love the concept of Lego games. I wish they were more difficult because they really stress that they're kind of a more puzzle-solving game. And they really aren't because they walk you through most of the puzzles like that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, well, if you haven't played LEGO City, I'd say it's a step above the other LEGO games that I've played. And I've read in some other places that the LEGO Movie video game was made by the B-Team. And who knew that Traveler's Tales had... who knew that they had something other than B-Teams?
Wow.
Is that a little bit harsh?
The biting commentary you come to expect on Radio Free Nintendo.
LEGO Ouch. Just harshly beaten down on Radio Free Nintendo.
So, really, is there, are you given the opportunity to build different things to solve a problem, or do they basically tell you this is what we need you to build?
They tell you.
Okay.
Yeah, they don't give you that opportunity, which is a shame. It kind of defeats the purpose of the whole master builder, do what you want thing.
Yeah, that was kind of what I was surprised to hear you say, because isn't that basically the premise of the movie?
Yeah.
Effectively? Okay. All right, so that's a little disappointing, but I can understand the difficulty there in that.
Now, how does the game look? Because I remember seeing a friend of mine playing through the Lord of the Rings one, and it looked really good. Like, I was really surprised. You know, I figured it would be kind of simplistic and stuff, but it actually had some really, really nice environments.
Oh, yeah, no, it's fantastic. And when you enter the different environments, like, it looks like the movie. They go all out. It's great. And, you know, and they have a little bit of open worldness to it. When you have, when you're not in a specific level, you have different hubs that are the different worlds that you see in the movie. Right. And they're really nice to explore. They're obviously not huge because it's not that kind of game, but you know, they're pretty sizable, and they have little like mini quests you can do inside them. And you know, just the environment and the way they built everything, it's nice and crisp and really matches the effort they put into the movie.
So what else have you been playing?
Well, I've also been playing Professor Layton and the Azarine Legacy.
I'm assuming you've played...
I've played
or how many of... Yeah, okay. All right, good. Good.
I love Layton.
Yeah, it's hard not to.
He's so dashing.
It's the impossible collar on his jacket, that's all.
Just makes me swoon.
What do you? So you've played all of them, and I kind of wondered this when I played 3DS games, and I sort of felt a little different about them. Like how do you feel about how this game on the 3DS, you know, how there's been two of them now, how they compare to the earlier iterations of the game?
I don't know. I'm trying to think. It's pretty much. It's only slightly different. It didn't feel that huge of a difference for me. Not many puzzles really utilize the 3D aspect of it.
No.
And a lot of times I would just turn off the 3D when I was really like trying to focus on a puzzle because you're trying to not get
right,
a headache. Yeah, so it's the nice thing that they do with the 3D for me is when you're in a puzzle, if it doesn't really need both screens, they do really beautiful artwork that when you stick it in 3D is just amazing the way they have like it kind of like they do a lot of like kind of cutout designs and things, which I mean, I know some people have said they didn't really think it was that innovative, but for me, the simplicity just makes it beautiful how they're using it. But as far as the actual like big part of the gameplay, they don't really utilize anything special with the 3DS. The new one has a Street Pass feature, which I didn't get to really explore because I was playing the game before it was released, so no one to Street Pass with.
I didn't even realize the game had Street Pass, and I've already beaten it. Well, what does that do, out of curiosity?
The Street Pass feature?
Well, I have to assume it's like one of those mini games that's not really all that interesting, right? Where you collect furniture and, you know, stuff
yeah,
like that.
Kind of. It's called Treasure Hunt, and you kind of challenge other people to like find a variety of items. I don't really know if you're the one who hides it or if they're automatically hidden. And then the rewards you get are just 3D objects and dream sequences of characters.
Dream sequences.
You know, and I take my 3DS with me everywhere, and I still haven't street passed anyone with it. So
do I really want to see what Luke dreams about? I'm not sure.
It's food. Probably a lot of food.
New voiceover, yeah. Maybe?
Oh, man. It's like Luke, and he has the professor's hat. They're just hanging out.
Oh.
And the podcast takes a bizarre turn.
That's probably one of them in there, actually. This probably is Luke in the professor's hat.
And the professor's corpse in his basement?
Whoa. This got dark.
I thought that's John where we were going with it.
John declared a dark turn before he realized what was coming.
Yeah, I didn't even know. I mean, oof, wow.
So, you've completed the game, obviously, because you played it before it came out.
Yeah.
I'm trying to not spoil anything, because, I mean, it's still nuts. As far as late in games go, it's crazy. Does it feel, I mean, they call this the last game. Does it feel satisfying in that respect? As someone who's played all of them.
Honestly, like, if I had, I mean, the third game, which is the last of the first three, I mean, that may sound obvious, but I mean, the last of the prequels. Not prequels, damn it.
The last of the original trilogy.
There we go. Okay.
There we go.
That one, like, had a crazy outrageous ending, and that one felt really final, because it was so, you know, somber and just, my God, was it sad. And that one for me was like the most just poignant ending one. And I love that they had the prequels just because I just want more Leighton games. But it didn't top that finality of that third one for me.
Because if I'm remembering, and this really isn't that much of a spoiler, it just loops back to the start of the first game. Well, the first game that came out on the DS in 2006. That one.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I can see that. It's hard. I apologize. It's hard to ask questions about a game that there's been six of.
Yeah.
That they're all the same.
I mean, it makes sense. It's difficult. You could see the challenge for them when they're like, well, we kind of already know, like, everybody knows no one's going to die or something like that. Because, like, well, they're all
right
in the first one we all played. So,
right,
you know, you can't really lead people on that direction or do something too crazy because you know they end fine. The professor is obviously still a professor. Nothing crazy can actually change that would change the timeline like that.
Well, and you know characters they have to get rid of because they weren't in the first game.
Of course. So you see things coming. So they had a unique challenge that they set up for themselves.
I mean, I think beyond from a plot standpoint, from a gameplay standpoint, I can't imagine what it's like coming up with those puzzles at this point.
Oh, man.
Because you don't want to just replay the same puzzle over and over again.
Yeah, like, are they still basing their puzzles on those activity books or puzzle books that the first games were based on?
Yes and no. I mean, there's so many puzzles now.
Yeah, it's like 150, I think? 60? Somewhere in there?
Yeah, it's the most out of it. And then you get the 365, because it's one each day.
Oh. Yeah, so, it's... I can't imagine having to come up with effectively 400, 500 puzzles after having done five games of this already.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like, it's going to be like slide these blocks or, you know, use these matches to form something. And
There's less of that,
really?
I feel like.
Yeah,
in,
I mean,
in this
they're
game.
Still there and you hate them when they pop up because you're like, God damn it, I hate that one. It was in the last one. But for the most part, they did a good job at being, you know, unique puzzles, I think, for the amount they had to come up with.
There's quite a few of these kind of like Tetris style ones.
Yeah.
Where the block's gonna fall, you need to stack it all evenly.
Yeah.
And it does feel like when they did a game, they'd come up with some new ideas and then they'd do like six of them.
Yeah, right. I feel like it was definitely different from the first three. But like, because I played, what is the one right before Azeron? It's
Miracle Mask.
Yeah, Miracle Mask. Yeah. I played that literally like a week before I started this one, so all that was fresh in my mind.
Oh,
and there's a
wow.
lot.
That's you must be latent out.
Well, I had to be prepared.
I want to know my source material.
That's a lot of stupid plot to take in at one point.
Oh my gosh! But it definitely meant that when certain things happened, I like caught them a lot faster than the average player would, because I'm like, I just saw you. I know.
Right.
But I did see a lot of similarities in the actual puzzles between those two games than between any of the others.
Yeah, it's one of the things. I mean, obviously the way you navigate the world is different in those games,
yeah,
because you can't navigate on the main presentation screen because you can't touch the 3D screen.
Yeah.
But it does feel like the puzzles are structurally different, even though I can't put my finger on why.
Yeah, it's the same thing. Honestly, how are you going to describe over 400 freaking puzzles?
Yeah, this series is really hard to talk about now.
There's so many things.
All right, fair enough. John, speaking of puzzle games that are impossible.
Oh, God. Yeah, so, you know.
I hear you've made a terrible decision with your life.
Well, yes and no. I mean, every once in a while. You see, well, I think my first mistake was being inspired by Johnny Metz in his absence, you know, because I could sense that when I said in our email thread that we have every week to play on the show, that I picked up this game off the eShop. I could just hear him cackling with glee, because he actually thought I was lying, if that tells you something. He didn't actually believe I downloaded this. So, but I downloaded Mylon Secret Castle. Now, I have a long history with this game. I actually have beaten this game. I've mentioned it on the show before. Played through it, actually got to a point where I could not figure it out at all. It sat on the shelf. Bear in mind, this is like back in, like, I think when it came out, like back in 1988, like way back in the day. And sat on the shelf for a couple of months until I was able to pick up an issue of EGM or something like that that happened to show exactly how to beat the boss I was trying to beat, because Lord knows, this game's tutorials in any way, shape, or form are just not this game's strong suit. So I've played, I would say, I've probably put only about a half an hour into this game, because it pretty much makes you reach for an FAQ file right out of the gate, because it tells you nothing on the main,
including how to get in the door, essentially.
Yeah, it doesn't even tell you that. I mean, I figured that out because, you know, to go into a door, you start off in front of a castle, and there's several doors, you know, a couple of platforms, and there's doors up above you, and there's a platform up above you, but you can't jump up onto it. And it doesn't tell you how to get up there. And so there's, I think, about three doors, a couple of platforms that you can hop on. And then at the very end, at the very far right of the screen, there is a tree. And on the other side of that tree, there's a well. And so, you know, it's a platformer. So, you know, you go into the doors. You're not told anything. All you do is you press start at the title screen, and you're dropped immediately into this little environment. And you know, you walk over to the door, you press up, and you're into this kind of platforming area where you can shoot, and you can shoot upwards and downwards, and you know, you're this little boy in his little sleep outfit kind of thing. You know, and there's
sleep outfit.
Yeah, like a jammies or whatever you want to call them. And so, you know, you're shooting monsters and they're flying around, but you know, you just kind of figure stuff out by kind of shooting everything. You're not told where to go.
By everything, you mean like the walls.
Yes.
The non-walls.
Yeah, the walls.
The black space where walls would be.
Yeah, I mean, you figure out eventually that, you know, you shoot one block out of a wall, and then you just keep shooting that area, and more blocks, you know, are removed from the wall, and, you know, you can shoot things and get money, and, you know, you can shoot through walls, and it, pretty much every time that you get stuck, you're pretty smart to just start shooting everything around you. And if there's nothing around you that you can actually go through.
Such is life.
Yes. Sounds it's legit. Like, yeah, completely legit. So, yeah, you just start shooting everything, and eventually you hope and pray that something will happen. So you go through a couple of these, you know, there's two of these different kind of platforming areas off of the main part. And the other door, the third door, is a shop. Right. So you go through these other platforming areas and you get some money and you go into the shop and there are you can jump up. There's three different sort of things you can jump up and hit with your head. And two of them are hints, which tell you something, which tell you such useful hints as find a saw. And also there's a couple of other hints that absolutely have nothing to do. Bear in mind that you aren't even told that you can have items at this point. So telling you to find a saw,
find a saw
when there is nothing even resembling a saw, or there's nothing even resembling anything that...
An item.
Anything resembling an item. I mean, the only thing that pops up from time to time is an umbrella and a music box that lets you go to this, you know, extra stage where you can get extra money. So, yeah, you're pretty much left in the dark. And I know from playing the game before that you actually have to find a saw to cut down the tree that then lets you jump into the well and keep going. But for the life of me, I cannot remember how I did it. And I actually remember being stuck in this exact same way when I first played the game, because there is nothing that makes any sense, because there's nothing, there is no saw. That's what I'm saying. That's if you could ask me to sum up this game, I would say there is no saw. So yeah, that's my little secret castle. It's a lie. It's a complete lie.
So this is the very beginning of the game and you can't progress at all.
This literally, I mean, this is after playing the game for 10 minutes.
I guess they don't want to lie to you. They're like, this is what you're in for, man.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, because, and I remember, I honestly don't know how I ever got deeper into this game than I did. I mean, with no FAQ files. I mean, I can go on any number of sites online and find out what to do. But this is the kind of thing, I mean, it's the epitome of bang your head against the wall game design where you don't tell the user anything. And literally, you just hope that they just figure it out by sheer trial and error. So,
I mean, we've joked in the past that this game existed to sell subscriptions to Nintendo Power, because you'd get like one room a month in the strategy guide section.
Yeah. And
so you couldn't even buy one issue. You had to buy a year's worth just to get through the game.
Yeah.
But like every time I've made that joke, hearing you describe it, I'm more aware that that may actually be the design conceits in play here.
Or, yeah. You know, this kind of sounds to me like the proto Dark Souls, you know?
Just very proto. People,
yeah, a lot of people could get into this today and do Let's Plays. Or not,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, if you want a game where you may spend an indeterminate amount of time shooting at a wall...
Maybe a saw will pop out.
Yeah. The thing is, though,
that's
you laugh. You laugh. But I would not put it past this game. I wouldn't. So, yeah. So I'm going to keep banging my head against it. I'm going to figure it out. The thing is, I think I'm resolving right now. I pledge that I refuse to actually go to an FAQ file for this game. I'm not going to do it. No way.
Now, he's not promising to finish this game. He's
no.
He's promising to not go to
no.
a guy.
Finishing this game, that's not on the table. I'm not putting that out there right now. But
he's not even promising to continue to play this game.
No.
Yeah, one day later. Done.
Yeah, so we'll see. The future is dim for My Lawn Secret Castle, but I vow in front of everybody and our audience to keep going. So...
Wow.
You have to at least find the saw. I mean,
yeah, I'm going to find the saw. I'll keep you up.
That would be really, quite a defeat. Not even getting to the saw.
Not even getting through the first hint of the game.
Maybe they didn't understand what a puzzle was. Maybe they were like, yeah, we just won't tell them anything about it. That's a puzzle, right?
Yeah. It's kind of like Where's Waldo, but he's dressed in all the same clothes as everyone.
It's like technically.
I'm
just
gonna
tell
you which one Waldo is. Puzzle.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, it's a puzzle, all right. It's a puzzle.
It's so puzzling if that's what you're going for.
Mm-hmm.
So this is on the the 3DS eShop?
Yeah, it's on the 3DS eShop.
Okay. So you can take this masochism with you.
Yeah, you know, because that's what you want to do.
Does the save state help you at all, or
well,
would this game always have like unlimited lives anyway?
Well, no. Oh, well, that's... Oh.
You could die.
I'm glad you bring that up, because I didn't even mention that. You get one life.
Yeah!
Oh.
One life. So, and you have... now, I'm not sure if later on, if you actually get more, like, health, if you build up health over the time, but you start off and you... I think you get about 8 health... Like, you have a health bar, and you have, like, 8 points of health on there. And if you lose them all, the game is over. Like, over.
You're back outside.
You have to find
yes.
the saw.
Oh my god.
You have to find the saw. I mean, it doesn't matter if you found, you know, the saw, if you found the hammer, the chisel, whatever. It doesn't matter. Your game is done and you have to go all the way back to the beginning. You get one life.
I desperately, desperately want you to uncover the saw and then die right before you get it.
But that's the thing. I mean, you, and the thing is,
because you will uninstall that game from your 3DS and never think of it again.
The thing is, it's so easy to get hit too, because the thing is, you don't really have much control. I mean, you can shoot upwards. You can shoot on an upwards kind of arc and a downwards arc, but the controls just exactly right. So it's, you don't have the most, you can't always defend yourself very well, and you have, you know, I mean, you have enemies coming at you sideways, diagonally kind of thing. It's kind of Castlevania-esque in that way, where the character that you're controlling does not really have the control necessary to defend himself at all times from the enemies that you're fighting. Like, they're much more, you know, mobile than you are. So, yeah. But one life, no idea where the hell you're going, don't know where the saw is. That's Mile on Secret Castle.
So, I'm going to go next. First off, I'm going to... I'm pretty sure when we talked about Weapon Shop Delmasse a few weeks ago, I promised some kind of update, because I know I'd only been playing it for like 20 minutes when we did the episode. And I've been trying to play it while I was waiting for my turn with the volume turned off, which for a rhythm game is completely pointless. But, so I went through recently, and this weekend, and just went through the whole game. And so if you missed the episode where I talked about what the game is, it's a rhythm game where you play a blacksmith's apprentice who has to make weapons for RPG game heroes who come to your shop to with specific quest objectives that you need to equip them for. That's really weird premise, but that's what the game is. So somebody comes in and says, I need a sword. You look at what the mission they're going on is. You look at their level, and then you try to make them a sword that is fitting for them. And then you watch from a distance as you get these almost tweet-like updates from them as their quest is going on. And depending on the quality of weapon you provided them, they will either succeed or fail. So the objective, obviously, is to get them through these missions right up until the point where you fight the big bad of the game. You don't fight them. You sit in your shop and listen to people fight them. But each character is sort of on their own story track that leads them to a confrontation with the big bad. I think he's actually referred to as the Dark Lord. Like, that's his name. Because the game is very self-aware. I mean, it was written by a Japanese comedy duo. So it makes sense this was the last Guilda 1 game to come through, because it has an absolute ton of text. Mm-hmm. What I was trying to do when I played the game the first time was I was just thinking of the game as a game where you tap out weapons and that's it, and you're done, and that's the core gameplay. While that is the primary gameplay conceit, most of the entertainment comes from watching this essentially Twitter feed of all of the people you've armed who are out in the field doing stuff on their quests as they sort of talk to no one in particular around themselves, or they talk to the enemies they encounter and just say ridiculous and stupid things.
Now, how varied are these messages?
They're very specific for the story, mm-hmm. and there's 7 characters, plus a bunch of the characters they refer to as generic heroes, who will even, and they'll say things like, my name may be generic, but my blade isn't, and things like that. I mean, they're very aware of what they are. But the story-specific heroes that you equip, they all have very unique things that impel them forward. One of them has watched a lot of Sentai shows and wants to be a hero, so he's got like a, you know, like a brass stove on his chest armor, and he's just talking in a fake French accent about how he's going to be the greatest hero. And there's this evolution of him being the worst hero ever, and then slowly progressing into being not only competent, but gaining something to fight for, which is this woman he meets, and ultimately to find out she's got a fiance, and it crushes him. But you get to see these conversations that he's having with no one in particular evolve, and occasionally you hear one half of the conversation where he's talking to somebody else. But each character has their own plot narrative like this. So there's the old woman who was part of the party that killed the Dark Lord the first time. She's out looking for her husband, who is also in the party, but you all know he's dead. So she's just wandering in the field finding finding these enemies that she fought 50 years ago who are also old, arguing with them about who's oldest. I mean, it's weird stuff like that, that the game's real self-aware, and once I stopped thinking of the rhythm part where you're tapping out the making of weapons as the core gameplay and really just enjoying the ridiculous stuff that the game is telling you was sort of where the fun of the game is, I found myself enjoying it a lot more. And it takes a little while because early in the game, maybe you're only interfacing with two heroes. But by the 10th day, you've got five or six of them, and four may come in the shop on any given day. So you may have three in the field and four of them that you've just had a face-to-face conversation with that you have to make them a weapon. So it is kind of fun just to see what they're saying. And a lot of times I had to filter characters. I'm only reading what they say just so I don't miss things. I spent a lot of time trying just to keep up with this feed as it gets moving really fast late in the game. So it's actually a really nicely put together game. I mean, obviously it's a quarter of what was the Guilda 1 release in Japan. And, I mean, it's damn sight better than Aeroporter, for God's sake.
Of course.
It's not as ridiculous as Liberation Maiden, but it's really super weird, and I actually really enjoy it.
It sounds like a pretty cool concept, like a really unique concept where if somebody described it to you, you wouldn't immediately think, like kind of like when you first described it, I was like, eh. But it actually sounds like it would be pretty fun, like just to kind of see, to sit back and see what happens, how the scene unfolds.
Yeah, I mean, because there's enough characters there that you're going to grow to like at least one set of them. There's a set of these Chinese acrobat twins, and they're roughly the apprentice's age. So he kind of says some things where he's real awkward around them, and they have real diametrically opposed personalities. So when they're out in the field, you may see them arguing with each other about really stupid stuff. I mean, it's kind of, you kind of get excited to see some characters come in because you're like, oh, this is going to be fun. I'm looking forward to this.
Now, do characters die?
So if they lose their mission, they come back, they lose the weapon that you made for them. And that can be a relatively significant investment because weapons get better each time they're used. So they gain a +1, essentially. I had like a +7 weapon, which is ridiculous because usually you've advanced up the weapon tree so far you wouldn't use one 7 times, but I had the opportunity to because of these random characters that come in. And like when I lost that weapon, I was devastated. It was like, oh, this is the worst. Nothing worse could happen than this. And the character comes back in and they're real disappointed. And depending on their personality, they may give you a hard time about that crappy weapon you made, or they may kind of be like, I'm sorry, I lost your weapon.
So, yeah. but do you have any indication before you let them, you know, go off with your sword? Like, do you have any indication that they're going to succeed or not?
You should have a pretty good feeling because you know what level they're at, and weapons are ranked accordingly by level.
Okay.
And you know what the enemies they're going to be facing are weak to, and each weapon has three different ways it's judged on its blunt force power, its stabbing power, and its slashing power. If you give them a weapon that's in roughly the right level, that's strong against the right thing, they should succeed.
But it's not guaranteed.
It's as long as you do a good job making it, it's pretty close to guaranteed.
Yeah.
Okay.
But sometimes finding the weapon out of the huge number you can make, finding the right one, it can be tricky. And sometimes you may not have an option in front of you that this is the right weapon.
Yeah.
So you may have to use things to augment the creation process to try to hone something close to being good enough. And they may come, and maybe you get ahead in the story of where you are with making weapons. They may fail because you don't have a weapon available that's good enough. I mean, there are some, you will see some failure. And generally speaking, they just come back and they're like, hey, I'm going to come back in 2 days, make something better next time. And, you know, you try again and usually you're successful in the second go. It's a real laid back kind of game because there is a lot of time where you're just sitting there reading these chat logs that are going up. So it's kind of a relaxed experience. And I think once I stopped thinking of it as a rhythm game and more of as this kind of almost like an...
Sounds almost like real-time strategy or something like that where...
It's got like adventure components.
Yeah.
Because ultimately...
Like you're kind of creating resources and then kind of sending them out into the world.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's... But it's so small scale because you're sending a person out there this one dude who's going to go and kill, you know, a monster who is collecting flowers because they provide immortality, but it's like a giant bull monster. So you almost never see the monsters. But there's one example where it's a giant, like a minotaur, that wants to be a woman. So it's already a little awkward. that it eats this grass that's supposed to grant immortality, and it secretes the immortality potion from its horns after it eats them. And you get some real awkward conversations about that thing, where you're like, ooh, ooh. But it's still fun just to have that going on, because it's so ridiculous that, you know, you have to leave some things to your imagination, because you may only get half a conversation. It may throw things at you, where you're like, that's a little awkward.
Yeah.
But it's just, it really kind of feels like an adventure game.
Yeah.
And even though you're not leaving, you never leave. You literally never leave the shop.
Yeah. I mean, it has kind of it sounds really like kind of like a throwback game to when stuff, you know, I remember I played Zork a while back, and it sort of reminds me of something like that, where they're kind of trying to paint a picture without necessarily having all of the graphical flourishes that you would usually, you know. So you're trying to tell a story and paint a picture and, you know, explain how all this stuff happens without necessarily having the visual cues to do so.
Yeah, the only game I can really compare it to where you do the setup and then you're hands off is like My Life as a King.
Mm-hmm.
But in that game, you had no idea what was going on until the game ended, and there was no real humor in it. This game really lives off the fact that it can be funny.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I was pretty cool on it the first time we talked about it on the show. I'm glad I gave it a second chance. I think it's definitely worth playing, especially, and if you're, you know, in the dark, they do sales for the Guild series every so often, so, you know, you can wait for one. I think it's definitely worth it. I got quite a few hours out of it in the end, so it's a pretty fun little game.
Yeah, it sounds pretty
cool.
So,
the other game I played off the eShop is also very Japanese, to completely different way. After getting, I don't know, a disturbing number of press releases about the demo release for Conception 2 on the 3DS eShop, I went to Twitter and said, talk me down from this ledge that I put myself on, and don't convince me to play this game. And instead, the irresponsible people who follow me said, no, you should definitely play
yeah,
this demo.
Because no one wants to play something ridiculous, James.
This is what needs to happen.
That's never good for this podcast.
I'm not worried about it being ridiculous. I'm worried about it being just incredibly uncomfortable. And I want to say, the demo delivers.
This is
so if you've not been following this game, because why wouldn't you be? The premise is you are a high school student, and you go to a high school where, because it is Japan after all, you go to a high school where these elite students are training to fight monsters in these dungeons that are spread around to presumably prevent the end of the world. I mean, it's Japan. It's a Japanese game. Already this game is more Japanese than Weapon Shop Daomase. But the premise here is that you go around campus chatting up your female co-ed students and trying to build relationships with them so that you may then go to the temple and produce star babies, as they refer to them, or star children.
Star children, yes.
At which point you effectively produce what looks like a kid maybe 6 or 7, but at the height of like a 3-year-old, who form the backbone of your party when you go into the dungeons to fight enemies. It's real weird.
So they're pro teen pregnancy here.
They are not only pro-teen pregnancy, they are saying you need to get after this as much as you can and as irresponsibly as you can.
Do the other girls care that you're kind of like going amongst all the girls?
No, they encourage it. It's super weird.
They know what's up.
So in the demo...
It's to save the world, so why not?
It's for a good cause, right?
In the demo, I was... I ran into one of the girls in the game, and she told... And she's just rambling on about after school activities, like there's nothing weird about this whole situation at all, and I'm still trying to get over how freaking bizarre this is. And at the end, she ends up, my character ends up, you get some text prompts where you say whatever, and she randomly starts talking about how she likes to swim, but she doesn't want to join the swim team because maybe they're too good for her or whatever. And your character ends up dragging her to the pool, where you have a 5-minute monologue about swimming, And then it's like, your relationship's gone up. I'm like, oh, this game is too damn weird for me.
Yeah, like, I played that part of the demo, and isn't it kind of weird and creepy just how you push her to swim so much? She's just like,
get in the pool! Yeah, it's super weird.
Back home, I like swimming, but, you know, I don't really feel like it now. No, but you're really good about swimming.
God damn it, get in the water.
How about that pool, huh? Huh? Go to the pool. Come on. Let's go to the pool.
No, he doesn't just say, let's go to the pool. He grabs her by the hand, and she goes, where are we going? And he drags her there.
Stranger danger.
This game... At which point, the game, after I've gone through the whole...
Wait, but first, like, the... like, you get to the pool, and the instructor is there, and the instructor convinces her that, yes, like, you're going to be awesome at the swimming team. And then your character is just like, yeah, I'm not going to stick around. Like, yeah, have fun
like,
swimming.
Peace. And she's like, actually, I was really hoping you'd stick around. He's like, no, peace out.
He's there for the conflict.
The best part, though, is they're talking to her. They're trying to sell her on the swim team. And they're like, no, you'll get, like, fish gills and fins when you get in the water. I'm like, what the fuck is this game doing? And then he pieces out on her. It was super bizarre. And then the game told me, all right, you've talked to all the girls. Now you need to take one back and produce a star child. I'm like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this game. And it forces you, and you get a really creepy silhouetted animation that's not great. Okay. And then it produces a child you have to name, and the girl goes, take good care of raising our children. And I'm like, all right, we're done here.
I gotta go study for a test, so go have fun with my
kids. I'm going to go take them into a dungeon. I'm going to do a good job. I'm a good dad.
So it just basically happens. This child is conceived out of nowhere, behind closed doors.
Yes.
I didn't even get to that part because, you know, at first I thought maybe this game is not as bad as it sounds. Maybe, you know, like the interacting with the girls is going to be as fun as it is in Persona or something like that. But no, like the second person that I talked to, she was saying, like, she seemed to be really confident. And at some point, I had the choice to say something. I said, oh, you're built for confidence. And she says, what? I'm short and I'm, you know, kind of ugly compared to the other goddesses around here. Or are you saying that because of my breasts? That's awful. I didn't say anything about your breasts. What the hell are you doing?
This game is super weird.
It's like, are you saying that because of my breasts? Huh?
Yeah, that's how that went. That's how that goes down, and your relationship suffers because of that, apparently. Oh,
yeah, like, there's nothing in the prompt, like, there's nothing when you choose the conversation that would lead you to believe that this is a bad choice. I'm just saying, yeah, you're right to be confident. You're awesome, but no. No, she's going to take it the wrong
way. Not upset because this game is creepy, but because it's not realistic.
No, but, like, I thought, like, I really wanted to give it a chance because I had read, you know, on the internet that you know, like, the game had something good about it, and I wanted to have an open mind, but maybe the internet is full of creeps.
I mean, what blows my mind, it's a sequel, so people wanted
it
more.
Is.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever, so the first one was.
The first game didn't come out in the West, but shocked. I know, everyone's stunned that this game is too Japanese for the rest of the world, but for whatever reason, they decided, no, this is the one. This is the one we're bringing over. And it's part of me kind of wants to see what the rest of the game is like, because the dungeon stuff was actually kind of good.
Yeah, that was my next question. I mean, so when you have this stable of star children, what, like...
Yep, so how it works is you pair groups of three star children into three parties, and they act as a tandem unit. So each star child has a class, and the classes that make up the party ultimately determine what skills they have, and the equipment of the individual children determines and their level, because each child levels independently.
So when the child is conceived, are they automatically assigned a class, or do you...
I think you could pick from three. Or something along those lines. And I think the stats of you and the mother determine the three you can pick from. And maybe randomness, I don't know. You can, quote, only conceive of one child in the demo. It's very... The combat system is interesting because it's spatial. There's different enemies around, and the angle of attack matters, and trying to keep yourself from being able to be flanked is important. So that all works out okay. It's just all the stuff outside of the dungeons themselves are kind of I mean, the first dungeon was really basic. But it's all the stuff outside that is obviously where the selling point of the game is. I just don't know I'm ready for that. That's a lot to get through for what may be a good dungeon. I mean, it's real weird. Part of me is like, well, this game is super weird. Maybe I can handle it just because of that. And part of me is like, I don't think I want anything to do with this game.
It's pretty obvious you're uncomfortable. You know?
It wasn't too bad until they did the actual titular conception event. And I'm like, nope, I'm done. I'm out. Because they actually conceive the child, and then the child pops out of a nesting doll after the event takes place. Because, I don't know. It's real odd. And seeing the children that, you know, their faces and their body, they kind of look like they're, you know, maybe 5, 6, maybe up to 8. But they're like the size of like a 2-year-old. It's just a lot of things that add up to be real weird.
Mm-hmm.
In different ways that don't make sense. And this is a weird demo, and people should play it if only to understand how weird it is.
So, who released it? Was it Atlas?
What, ditch them and go back to school, and you're like, just hang tight, babies.
That's just it. Where do the kids go? They don't even talk about that. So after the dungeon, you go back to class, they're like, they're bitching about how hard math class is. I'm like, you've got 9 kids at home.
You can't afford to go to school. You gotta be a father.
Geometry ain't your biggest concern,
be a father
yo.
To your child, for crying out loud.
You have 9 children at like 14.
Oh my gosh.
You're a terrible father. I don't understand this game.
I just can't wait.
At all.
I mean, Becky Holliday is going to review this game, and I'm just like, should I warn her? Oh my God.
I'm kind of happy it's her. I feel like that's going to go interestingly at worst case scenario. Like, there are staff members who it's probably best it's not.
Amen. Amen.
John's just thinking, how can I get Zach this game right now?
Ding, 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 ding.
Can I gift on the eShop?
Well, it's $40. It's a little bit expensive for a joke.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. We've done $30 jokes
so
on this
many
show.
Layers here, man.
I've got multiple games for John Lindemann that there's no way he could play in the presence of other people that I'm just waiting to give
him.
He's been dodging.
I think enjoy your massage. I think that pretty much that'll last you for a couple decades, I think. That's priceless. I can't even put a price on it. I love it so much.
It is priceless. All right, Guy, save us from this, because this has gone way out of hand.
Well, I'm playing about like 18 different things at the same time right now, but one of the more recent and, I guess, interesting games that I'm playing is Pokemon Battle Trousseau, or however you pronounce that. I have no idea. So I just made up the official pronunciation. It's Trousseau.
It's Trousseau. Okay.
And so this is a puzzle game with Pokemon in it, but it's not just like with Pokemon in it. Like they don't just compose the tiles that you move around to match stuff and make disappear. Like there's serious Pokemon mechanics in this game, and I'm completely Pokemon illiterate. I have no idea. Like I know Pikachu, like he's yellow and he shoots electricity, and that's about it. You know. So I didn't know what I was getting into when I got this game.
600 to go, Guillaume. You got 600 left.
Yeah, no, seriously. Well, the game, and the game is super obtuse for a puzzle game, which are supposed to be simple. Like, it's really not a good thing to be. So you can select a Pokemon that's going to help you. This Pokemon is going to be one of the tiles that you move around, and otherwise, like, the rest of the grid is going to be composed of Pokemon that are, you know, based in whatever region you're like, the levels are divided in regions. I guess it's a Pokemon thing. And so, you know, like, if you've got grass-type Pokemon, I guess you want to bring a fire-type Pokemon to burn the grass down. That makes sense. But why steel Pokemon are good against fairy Pokemons? I've got no idea. So this kind of stuff I have to discover on my own, and the game makes no effort at all to teach me first, like, what the Pokemon that I'm equipping is, like, what his element is and what his strengths are, and it makes no effort to tell me what the area that I'm going to, like, what Pokemon I'm going to find there and what their weaknesses are going to be. It's really obtuse. There's a grid where you can choose your support Pokemon, and all you see is a number and the face of the Pokemon. So, like, I've got Pokemon 1, 2, 4, 5, 174, 263, and I'm supposed to know, like, right then and there, oh, yeah, this is exactly what I need, a Shieldon with, a rock power, I guess. Like, the only way I can know that it's got a rock power is by touching it on the touchscreen, and then I get the info. So then I guess I slide that to my support Pokemon, I get out of there, and then I go to the game and I try to find the place where I'm going to find Pokemon that are weak against rock. It's, I don't know, it's an ordeal. But other than that, it's basically Bejeweled. Like, you slide these Pokemons around, you match them, you match three, and after you've matched enough of them, like, after you've set up some sort of a chain reaction or enough of a combo, then suddenly matching two Pokemon together is going to make them disappear. And at that point, basically, the screen clears itself. You have basically no input at all to make. And that kind of, gives me the feeling that this game plays itself a little bit, and there's not that much puzzling to be done in this puzzle game. So, I guess if I had to define this game in one word, it would be kind of unsatisfying. I think that...
I like that we've gotten to boilerplating games this episode.
I think that Pokemon fans are going to get much more out of it than I'm getting out of it, because you do collect Pokemon, and that's something people like to do, I guess.
But, yeah, a little bit.
Other than that, like, if you don't already know what the Pokemon are, you it's really hard to play. And also, since there's 600 of them, there's not 600 different kinds of colors that they use. So a lot of them kind of look similar when you're playing, and when you have a Clefairy next to, I don't know, name me another kind of pinkish white
Jigglypuff.
Pokemon, Jigglypuff. Well, when they're right next to each other on the grid, you try to match them, and then you realize, oh, fuck. But then it's too late because you already broke your combo, and, you got stomped by Charizard. I don't even know what I'm saying right now.
Perfect. Just keep talking.
Keep talking. This is golden. Just keep it rolling.
So there's that, the colors are confusing. And also, you can't change the controls, and you're sliding Pokemon around, right? So it should be easy. You should just, press on a Pokemon and slide it and release, and he's going to stick there. But no, because there's some sort of fling mechanic. Like, if you just, fling it, it's going to keep going a little bit, and that's supposed to be, I don't know, I guess maybe this is a technique that you're supposed to be able to master, but I really can't. And what actually happens is that because the touchscreen is, can't really differentiate between a kind of a flick and between a really, really fast movement, that just means that the controls are really imprecise, and if you're trying to go too fast, then your Pokemon is not even going to stop where you want it to, and that's also, going to break your combos, and yeah. This is not a very good puzzle game.
Yeah.
Well, dang.
But is it a good Pokemon game, is the question.
I guess. It's pretty satisfying, I guess, when you use the right Pokemon against the right Pokemon, then you do a ton of damage, and it says it's very, very effective, and the health of the Pokemon you're fighting goes down, and you capture it, I guess, and you feel good about yourself.
So that's what this game's about. It's a self-help guide in the form of a puzzle game.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Like, if you really love Pokemon the creatures, and you can't stand Pokemon the RPG, why not? Like, you're going to get 600 of those things. And
if you love Pokemon but hate yourself, just play this game.
If you love Pokemon,
yeah. It sounds like it's geared towards people that really, really like Pokemon a lot, know a lot about it, but it's not really. You should go to it if you're a Pokemon for a Pokemon.
A Pokemon. If you are a Pokemon, you should play this game.
I think they call themselves Pokies, just like Trickies.
I'm not even going to comment on that, but it sounds like it's for Pokemon fans first. And
I appreciate your decorum.
And puzzle fans second.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I was getting through this as a puzzle fan, and I'm not getting what I wanted. But
Pokies.
You know, Pokemon.
Wow.
Well, another game that I've been playing recently is Kirby's Epic Yarn. Believe it or not, even though I love Kirby and I love platformers and I love playing co-op, I hadn't played this yet. So the girlfriend and I played through it very quickly. I think, you know, I'm probably the last person to have played this. So everyone knows you play as Kirby, but this time he's made of yarn, so you can't actually swallow enemies. Instead, you kind of fling a lasso at them and you unravel them. It's very violent. and you can't actually die. So this is kind of weird to me because I like 2D platformers mostly. Like, I actually like the frustration of constantly dying in a really difficult platformer. But in this game, you're never going to die. If you touch...
'Cause you can't.
Yeah, if you touch an enemy, you're just going to lose the gems that you've been collecting throughout the levels. And if you fall into a pit, you're going to fly right out while losing gems that you've collected throughout the level. And, you know, I understand that this makes the game easier for kids and perhaps more welcoming to newcomers. But to me, I think I find the frustration of dying having to restart a level more satisfying than just like losing stuff that I've been collecting and then finishing the level and not getting like the top marks, like the top score or whatever it is that you're supposed to get, and then having to replay the whole thing again. It's like it's the difference between frustration, but in a good way, and just kind of annoying, you know?
I mean, does it feel kind of pointless? Like you didn't really prove anything at all by beating it?
Yeah, a little bit, but it's more like it's an annoyance, right? Like, okay, shit, I got hit, but I still have to keep going, and I know that, you know, like I probably don't have a chance anymore to get all the gems that I need. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to have to replay this again, and it's still going to be a little bit tedious.
Yeah.
But that's just like where my preference and, you know, platforming lies. I've started to really have a distaste for more like plodding and more exploratory platformers. And I really like the snappier games that are a little bit more difficult and a little bit more fast paced and more about the actual platforming. Mm-hmm. So,
as a two player experience though, how did you feel about it?
It was okay, except that you can, you know, like when you swing your lasso, you can also pick up the other person and throw them around. And we ended up doing that a lot just by accident, which is okay. But sometimes it was a little bit frustrating. And also, I think that in this day and age, you know, games are not really made with sprites anymore, or very rarely they're made with polygons. So, all of these 2D platformers should ideally have a camera that can zoom out to reveal more of the screen when the two players get a little bit too far apart. But in this game, it doesn't. And it just ends up like one player controls the camera. It seems to be kind of random. Like it doesn't seem to be always player one or player two. So sometimes you just fall out of the screen and you're not really sure what happened. And then you lose a lot of gems and then you're going to have to play the level again. And, yeah, it's a little bit annoying. But in terms of presentation, though, oh my god, like this is the cutest Kirby game I've ever seen. And those games are made to be super cute, right? Like they really crank that up to 11. And it's not just like the pastel colors and the cute enemy design, but you've got, you know, like the, what are they called? The Waddledees, which are the standard enemy. They're really not a threat. In any Kirby game, but in this one, like they often trip when they're walking around in the level, and when they trip and fall flat on their faces, they make a squeaky toy sound. It's just, you can't help but laugh. So it's just, you know, like, and most of the time you're attacking them, they were freaking like asleep at the job. So you're attacking them out of nowhere. As I said, this is a very, very violent game. And, yeah, like, there's all sorts of neat touches. And I think, really, like, the sound design is probably one of the most, the most underrated things about this game, because everything makes a really, really satisfying sound. Like, when you press twice on the jump button, you turn into a parachute and makes this plop sound that's just perfect. And, yeah, like the squeaky toys and the stuff like that. It's really, really cute. It's really awesome. And, so we finished that, and, I was watching the end credits, and it really gave me this feeling of having finished a classic Nintendo game. Like the music was perfect, and, you know, like the credits, there was all sorts of little cute story scenes that were being played out. And, I really had like this nostalgic feeling, like just the way that, you know, like the first time that you finish Super Mario World or Yoshi's Island, you know. I don't know. So, like, in the end, I think I enjoyed the experience, but it's really, I'm really hoping that Yoshi's, you know, title name in progress, or like work in progress, Yoshi's Epic Yarn, is going to opt for a different kind of challenge, is going to opt for something else other than collect all the fruit in level, collect all the gems in level, and you're invincible, and just get to the finish line. Because that kind of ruins the fun of the game for me.
There's a joke here about extancy being that game's biggest challenge.
About what?
Existence. Being real. Having form. Not being a screenshot we saw at a Nintendo Direct, and actually having some substance beyond that.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure we'll see it soon, but
I want to say it's been a year since they first showed that screen. Like, I want to say it was January 2013.
Yeah, it's been more than a year.
It's been 14 months since we've seen that game. That's troubling. And on that note, we're going to have to wrap up new business. So stay tuned for listener mail right after the break. Welcome back. It's time for listener mail. The email, as always, is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And since Johnny's not here, I don't get to make other top-level domain jokes while he's talking about it. So, we're going to start off this week. First email, Kim, if you would be so kind as to read that for us.
Okay, so we have Delaney from Las Vegas. It says, last year we were shocked when Nintendo didn't have their big E3 press conference along with Microsoft and Sony. Now they said they aren't making an appearance at PAX East this year for the first time. Do you think that they will not have a press conference this year as well and continue with their Nintendo Direct approach, or will they go all out? Personally, I think they have to do a press conference this year at E3. They need to have heavy hitter games there that will make a huge splash, or things will look worse than now. I'm sure they will do some huge portion on the quality of life, whatever Iwata has been talking.
Sorry, I cut that thing up a little bit. My apologies.
Okay. has been talking about. But if they make the whole conference about that, then they blew it. They just need that one stupid high-selling game. 3DS was in this situation as well, and now it's a huge hit. Secondly, when are they going to tell us anything about this quality of life thing? What will it be? I think it could be something like a 3DS type thing with expanded exercise and fitness alerts like the pedometer in the 3DS. Maybe some type of expanded portable Wii Fit. Or maybe it will be a Nintendo cell phone. So much talk about Nintendo on mobile phones, and they actually respond to it with their own thing. Speculate as widely as possible.
The phone thing keeps coming up, and it would be such a mistake. Like, would Nintendo... I don't know. I'm a Nintendo fan, or at least I think I am, and I would never buy in a million years a Nintendo phone.
They're just never going to do it.
Yeah.
There's... just no point even really speculating on it at this point. I mean, if they haven't done it in the past year, they're never going to do it.
And I don't know what evidence there is that they would be able to do it successfully. Not because I don't. It's not a matter of doubting their technical prowess. It's a matter of it's such a hyper competitive space,
right?
And ultimately, you just bring the same feature set to market as everybody else. I mean, briefly, people thought, "Oh, curved phones are the future." Why? Mm-hmm. It's too competitive, it's too intense, and there's I can't imagine there's a lot of margin to be played with on there anyway. And the price for entry would be so high. That...
Yeah. And I mean, really, like, you have huge companies, you know, that are, you know, bleeding even getting into the space. So what's Nintendo going to do with really no history of making that kind of hardware? Or, you know what I mean?
It's just... Yeah, or that kind of OS, right? Like, they would have to have a way more open platform than they do now, and they probably don't want to. Well, or at least, like, they're extremely reluctant to allow anyone to be making games for their consoles. So, like, for their phones, they probably would try to do everything themselves. They would, you know, try to make every little thing of the OS, like every main tool, and probably the browser would not be compatible with a whole lot of websites. And
I mean,
yeah, I don't know.
You could, I mean, you could fork an Android build to do something like that, but still, does Nintendo have any Android people in house? No. You know, they don't have any Android devs in house. Like, they'd be starting from scratch on an entirely new platform. You know.
Yeah. I mean, so setting phone arguments aside for the moment, because I know we've talked about it before, and I think we all kind of agree that it's probably not in the cards. Let's briefly about the role. So their decision to not attend PAX East is curious because does anybody have off the top of their head when Mario Kart's coming out? It's before E3, right?
Well, yeah, it's in May.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Yes. So this would be... Have they shown this thing publicly in forever? I don't think they have.
No, so, they had, like, the Best Buy thing at, you know, like, was, during E3 last year.
That was almost a year ago.
Yeah, I mean, that was a lifetime ago.
And it wasn't very good. Mm-hmm. I mean, that demo wasn't great.
Yeah, I mean, I know they haven't done anything... They haven't really said anything about, like, the way the online component's going to work or anything like that, so... I think it's coming out May the 8th, I think. Is that right?
Something like that. I mean, they wouldn't make announcements at PAX East. Nobody does. Nobody announces things at PAX East because it's not what that format's for. I mean, three of us have been there a bunch of times. It's just... I mean, we've seen Nintendo's presence kind of wax and wane at that show. Mm-hmm. I mean, the first year of PAX East, remember they had like 5 DS kiosks set up? And as I referenced on the show not that long ago, they were electrocuting people.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, I mean, it was there was no Nintendo employees there. They were all contractors hired for the event. I think half the DS stations were a photo dojo. I mean, it was I almost would have rather they not been there, if only because I wouldn't have gotten electrocuted, but in part because it was just such a sad display. It just seemed less than cursory.
Yeah.
Now they have played a much bigger role in the show since it moved to the larger venue space. And, of course, that's partially because there's just more floor space available.
Right.
I'm not terribly surprised that they would have a small role at it, because it never seemed like it was really that important to them.
Mm-hmm.
It was always just kind of something they went to be there.
Yeah.
I'm a little surprised that they aren't going to do something with it.
Well, I guess to me it's confusing, really, because it's like, so they shied away from the big industry spectacle like E3, okay? And you would think that would, you know, make them turn towards something like PAX East, because, you know, obviously Nintendo has a huge grassroots fan base that it would be great to connect, and a lot of them are at PAX East. I mean, I can tell you from the thousands of street passes you get there. You would think that it would make sense for them to gravitate towards something like that, but now they're pulling back from that. So where does that leave us? I don't know.
Right.
But there's a lot of companies not at PAX East this year. I saw a tweet. I don't know if it's accurate, but Nintendo, Sony, EA, Capcom, Sega, Warner Brothers Interactive, and Deep Silver. Apparently, they're all not showing up.
And all of them, except for Sony, had pretty significant appearances there the last couple years. I don't think Sony was there last year.
Yeah, Capcom showed off DuckTales for the first time there.
Yep, and it had a line. It had a huge line.
Yep.
You had to get there. You had to get there basically when the show opened. I mean, it was ridiculous.
Yeah, no, it was crazy. They really didn't have enough kiosks for setups for the number of people who wanted to play that game.
Sega's been active there a bunch of times in the past. I mean. So I do wonder if maybe something changed about PAX East this year in general. If it's not if it's not necessarily a Nintendo thing. And
Do you think it's political? Do you think it's one of the two guys just putting his foot in his mouth one too many time?
No. I think it's probably they're going to do something different with the venue space this year, and maybe they tried to jack up the rates to a place where people weren't comfortable paying it. I mean, it could just be that there's a focus change on the event. I mean, that is a publicly discussed part of the PAX East experience. If you go there as a journalist who's been to E3, you know, more than once, or even maybe just one time, if you kind of get the feel, and you go into PAX East, or I assume the regular PAX is like this as well, you're going to find things are not what you expect, because there is a show floor, but it's really not that important.
Mm. Right.
It's not really what the show is about. So, I mean, I really shouldn't even call it a show. It's what the event's about. Mm-hmm. And if you go there expecting to do any kind of news, you're going to find yourself trying to squeeze two pages of copy out of what was that Zelda styled game where you played a robot with an afro on the WiiWare?
I don't remember. Frobot or something?
Yeah, Frobot.
Yes.
You're going to spend yourself trying to squeeze two pages of interview copy out of Frobot, and you can't.
It really is more geared towards indie developers rather than mainstream developers. Mm-hmm. It just has that kind of vibe more so than, I mean, E3 is obviously a big spectacle, so.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's either companies all decided on their own, you know, this really isn't worth it for us, or something in the event policy changed and it just didn't work out.
Yeah, a couple of months ago, I think that the PAX guys said they wanted to bring more advocacy groups, like to set up some, I don't know, more spaces for advocacy groups.
Advocacy?
Yeah. And yeah, so I don't know. Maybe it has something to do with that. Like, maybe they jacked up the prices for the bigger publishers to put more space for groups that can't afford otherwise, you know, the space.
Yeah. Well, so really, I think the answer is obvious, though. I mean, it's the fact that they didn't allow RFN panels or any of our Nintendo World Report panels in. So,
we went 0-2.
You know, I mean, that's going to cause a lot of companies to really think twice about the event.
Oh, you think it's a show of solidarity? Like Nintendo saw this?
I'm just saying, without our panels there, it's not nearly as legit as it was in past years.
Oh, yeah.
Makes sense.
We appreciate all 30 of you that showed up.
Yeah, and I'm the only one here who's actually going to PAX East this year, so I don't know if anyone listening is going to be there. You might see me probably just in one of the beanbag chairs in the handheld lounge. But yeah, other than that,
Guillaume's going to go to the room that we would have had and just sit there on the panel going, "We could have been here."
Yeah, you're just going to crash the panel in a drunken stupor.
Like, I'm having my panel.
Handcuff yourself to the stage.
Security.
This is my moment.
I'm going to make cardboard cutouts of you guys and just have a selfie with them.
Well, I mean, cardboard cutout of John is pretty much the same experience.
Oh, wow.
I can vouch for that.
So I'll go around real quick. Rapid fire. Does Nintendo do something different than they did last year for E3? And what is it? Go.
Everything? Yeah, I don't think they're going to repeat the whole let's have a live, quote-unquote, Nintendo Direct that we're going to stream and that no one's going to be able to watch. I hope they've learned from that lesson. And it seemed to, like, they knew that they had made a huge mistake at E3. Like, we went there and they allowed some media people to go in on the show floor before that Nintendo Direct started. And or was it after? But anyway, before the actual opening of the show floor. So they allowed people in the Nintendo booth, and they basically had kind of a press conference there. Like, they had the E3 show there, but except that it was all cramped, and we're in the middle of a sea of you know, tall journalists, and you couldn't see over them what was going on and who was the new Smash Brothers people that they were announcing. So, not the best experience.
I think I was on my tippy toes trying to take pictures.
Yeah.
So, as working home team during that live show of the booth, all we were getting were pictures of people holding up iPads as cameras, which people stop that. If you were a journalist, buy a camera. Holding up an iPad is really just no. blocking everybody's view.
So
and it's
obnoxious.
Not even that great quality anyways, the picture you're going to get for that.
Well, in the dark floor of E3, no.
Oh, yeah. It's especially for that conference. It was so, like, mood lighting.
So we just had we had pictures of rows of journalists holding up iPads. I'm like, well, this makes up for Nintendo Direct. This is great.
Are you sure they were not holding up 3DSs? Filming the event in 3D.
3DS XL.
We took pictures a couple of years ago, and if they couldn't hold up 3DS XLs, John.
Yeah, that's true.
We just crashed to the floor.
Yeah,
it was fine.
Two or three of them at a time had to hold one up. Yeah. I think my prediction is that Nintendo will do something at E3, like not at E3, but maybe nearby, and they'll have maybe like some sort of press only invite kind of thing. You know,
like over at Club Nokia across the street?
Yeah, something like that. I mean,
or the Hooters there.
Yeah.
Is there Hooters there now?
There's no Hooters.
God.
You could probably find something worse down there, but
well, there was that tarot card place forever that was in a trailer across the street.
I think they'll just try to strike a middle ground.
There's a place where you can buy scalped Kings tickets.
Yeah, there's a reason I don't go downtown much.
it's an interesting part of town that E3 takes place in. It's
right smack in the middle.
It's curious.
It's just off Skid Row.
So I will say the first year I went down there, we stayed in Koreatown, which isn't that far away, but it's far away.
it's not a great area.
LA is not a walking town. They don't expect you to ever like walk through streets. You have to get in your safety of your car and go.
Yeah, we didn't do
go,
that.
Go, go, go. No, seriously, go.
Just, like, run out of the hotel to the car.
I kind of think they'll do... I think they'll obviously be on the floor. I mean, they were on the floor last year. That wasn't the issue. I think the lack of spectacle last year is in no small part because, honestly, I don't know what they really would have shown besides 3D World. I mean, they showed a bunch of games that weren't going to be out until this E3 or very near to it.
Yeah.
So, maybe until next E3.
Yeah, and I mean, X, what would they show this year? We don't really know beyond maybe X and Smash Brothers.
I mean, Smash Brothers is a big deal.
And it's going to be playable, right?
It better be.
It's got to be.
It has to be. I mean, if it's not, I'll be flabbergasted.
It has to be playable.
Yeah.
Can you just walk up to one of the executives and you're like, I know you have a copy. Just come on.
Where is it?
Don't flabbergast me. Don't flabbergast me.
Maybe we'll get more. We might get Zelda. That could be there. And I cut this email down, but Delaney mentions a lot of these games.
Yeah.
I imagine Bayo will be playable again because it was playable last year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But besides that, I don't know. I mean, there's. I would assume there's something else.
Yeah, but I mean, they hold things so tight to the vest now that you just don't even really know. I mean,
but do they? I mean, they dump it out in Nintendo Directs constantly.
Yeah, you know what I mean. Like, there's nothing. It just doesn't seem like it. Seems like everything that's on the horizon we kind of already know about.
I think they'll do some kind of media thing just because I feel like they have to. I think Nintendo Direct was such an insular play that didn't really get the kind of reception they would have hoped. I mean, ultimately, I don't know that doing the live event is that valuable, except for the fact that it gets some members of the media really amped up. Because ultimately, the vast majority of people who watch it aren't there. Yeah. So for them, the effect isn't really that different. But I think there's a certain amount of buzz that it generates by just it being a live event. Now, granted, you know, having done those three or four times, I'm not going to miss having to get up real early to go down there if that's all they're going to do. But there is an undeniable degree of excitement that comes from just hanging out in that theater waiting for it to go.
Mm-hmm. Oh, totally. So, it's what you think of when you think of E3. It's just like these giant, like buzzy media things. And, you know, I mean, obviously that's lost with the Nintendo Direct. And a lot of people, I mean, I know a lot of people who don't watch the Nintendo Directs at all. They only read the media announcements. So they missed a lot of what was even going on at E3 with Nintendo last year. Because that's just, they want the quick snippets. They don't want to watch this huge long video that's like leading up to things. Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, the press conferences are the same thing. They're these incredibly long and usually incredibly awkward presentations where a person who has, you know, not great presentational skills gets up on stage and talks to a bunch of pie charts for 20 minutes while you're waiting for them to talk about a game.
Yeah, it's kind of different when you're there and you have like the
physical, yeah,
and everybody's there and it's fuzzy and stuff, or as opposed to just kind of sitting in like your bedroom staring at a tiny screen like, okay, is he getting to it?
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of they're talking about,
it's sort of like watching something live.
They're talking about market penetration of handheld systems amongst female gamers in Japan again. Oh god.
Well, it's kind of like watching something live versus watching something on DVR. It's you know, it might be the first time you're seeing it, but it's just not as exciting as watching something that's real live happening right in front of you, kind of thing.
Yeah, where you got to like run to the kitchen, grab a snack quick before the commercials are over.
Yeah, right. I got to bear witness, right? So
yeah, I was there. I personally don't think they're gonna skimp on that again. I think ultimately they may not like to have to put together a big expensive media presentation, but I think they're gonna have to.
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, gets people excited. They need excitement for the Wii U.
Do they ever?
I guess real quick, we'll talk about the other part of Delaney's question. Anybody have any predictions on what Iwata is going, when and what Iwata is going to show for the quality of life thing? I've written a massive amount of paper on that, so I'm stepping out on this one.
Oh, but you're our expert. I don't think anyone else cares.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks.
It better happen at E3 or just no one's going to care about it again anymore.
E3 is so game-oriented, though. I could see them just doing something completely different and, I don't even know, announcing it somewhere else at something that where the mainstream press would be more interested in it.
Hmm. Yeah, or maybe like they're going to announce it in Japan, because it sounds like it's going to be a very Japanese thing.
Mm-hmm. It's not the time of year for these kinds of health products in general, because they target... I mean, you could make an argument that they target pre-summer, so, you know, February, March, April, and then they target pre-January, you know, December, November. So June is really kind of a no man's land for them announcing this stuff. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that there's any real plus for them to announce at E3. I mean, their own words are they're not targeting the same audience anyway.
Yeah.
So maybe they just kind of look at E3 as, all right, this is not part of what we're trying to do.
Yeah, no one at E3 is necessarily anticipating what they're doing anyways.
Hey, right here.
Well, I'm just saying in this area with the quality of life stuff.
Nobody at E3 who's rational has any desire to anticipate what they're doing. I have decided to be irrational and attempt to bridge that gap. But, I mean, what they're doing, I don't know. They've literally said less than nothing. They have said things that effectively are, it exists and it is a platform. Also, I don't know what a platform is. That's basically what his conversation was with the investors. So, I don't know. Whatever. Knock yourself out.
Yep.
Yep. So, no, I don't think E3, but we'll see. Hmm. All right. So, for the next email, let's see. We're going to do them in new business order. So, John?
All right. This one comes from Jay Cheesy. Not sure who that is, but he's apparently a big fan of the show.
Really? You're not sure who it is, huh?
At the end of the year, I will be returning from a 2-year self-imposed gaming exile, which I instigated to help me focus on studies and family. What a guy this Jay Cheesy is. Real stand-up guy.
Yeah.
The last gaming console I bought was a Wii, and that is all I had that generation. So I'm looking to buy a Wii U for the Nintendo games and another system to help me catch up with all the other games I've been missing out on. I have absolutely no interest in the Xbox exclusive first party games, so it's probably going to be a PlayStation system. The question is, which one? PS3 games are ridiculously cheap and region free, so I could easily stock up on old games and do it that way. However, the PS4 looks great, and the promise of PS Now might negate the need for a PS3 at all. However, that could be a way off. Note, lag from bandwidth issues would not be a problem. I live in Japan. There is also the fact that some of the best last-gen games are getting updates to Xbone/PS4, like Tomb Raider, maybe GTA 5. Then there is the PC. It would have to be a plug-and-play system like a Steambox, but that gets more convoluted and disjointed the more I read about it, so I really don't know. I guess the question is similar to the classic, what cool stuff would you show a caveman who's just been defrosted after 6,000 years of being encased in ice? Question. Let me know what you do in my situation.
So for those of you who don't know Jay Cheesy is, this is former NWR staffer and Japan correspondent James Charlton, who's a friend of the show.
Former host of the Famicast.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I just had to troll him, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I've kind of decided that I don't need an Xbox One or a PlayStation 4. I've had a crisis of faith recently. I played through the new Tomb Raider, and I decided that games are junk now. So I don't need a new system. Modern games get on my nerves.
Yeah, I wouldn't say. I mean, I'm not swearing off modern games, but. To me right now, there's nothing really too compelling about PS4 or Xbox One. So,
yeah, the thing is, like, if James thinks that the PS4 looks great, then I would go with that. Like,
yeah,
the PlayStation 3 does have a big library and has a lot of interesting games. But yes, okay, so PlayStation Now might allow you to play Valkyria Chronicles regardless, right? And also, if you get a PlayStation 3, you're going to... And if you intend to play the latest games on that, if they make it on that platform, you're kind of going to regret going for the ancient system, because the PlayStation 3 does not work very well with Unreal Engine 3 games. Tomb Raider, lots of stuttering... I played Mickey Castle of Illusion, and that stutters. Like, it's got almost PlayStation 1 frame rate. Mm-hmm. It's really, really, really bad. And so a lot of multi-platform games just don't perform that well on PlayStation 3. It's good if that's all you have, but today I think you would regret the decision to go with that.
Yeah. I would probably go with PS4, personally, just because I think a lot of the games... The thing is with the PS4, and this is part of the reason why I've kind of held off on it, is because a lot of the games that I see coming out for it in the future are just going to be better-looking, updated versions of PS3 games.
Or, you know, games that you could get on the PC and that would run just as well or better.
Yep. And, you know, and if you want to get... If you're looking for those types of games, why get the PS3, you know, version of it? Why not just get the PS4 one? Because it'll be similar but look better. And...
Right.
I look at it this way, and I'm going to take the opposite position before I... Just to preface that before I go in, he does have about 6 years of games, and he's in Japan, so the used game market is a whole different animal over there than it is here. And of course, the new game market is a tremendously more expensive animal than it is over here. I look at it this way: he's got potentially. I mean, it's going to be a lot cheaper to buy a PS3, obviously, and if you go and buy a used one, it's even cheaper than that.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a big backlog of PS3 games that will probably never come to PS Now.
Mm-hmm.
That because they're just going to be relatively niche appeal. And in Japan, his selection for PS3 games is much more sizable than it would be in Western markets. So to that end, he's probably got lots of fairly affordable options where he could get a lot more out of every yen he spends than he would on the PS4.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. I think he's got enough content that he could keep entertained for quite a few years and then get in on a PS4 when it's a much cheaper proposition.
Yeah, I would agree with that, because it's so expensive just to get the brand new shiny system plus all the brand new games that everybody's going for, and there's going to be no markdowns, and especially if you haven't played games in forever, then yeah, go with the cheaper options if there's games you want, unless there's something you're dying to play on the new system. There's definitely a ton to keep you occupied with the PS3.
I mean, just don't look at PS4 screenshots. You won't even know. I mean, you've been out of the game for 2 years. You're fine.
Well, it's not the look of PlayStation 3 games that's a problem as much as it's the performance. And that can really get in the way of the gameplay, and that's annoying.
Hey, 30 frames per second is 30 more than he's been having for 2 years.
It doesn't always hit those 30 frames.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of pretty games on PS3.
Neither does Mac. What's your point?
You know, I mean, the thing is, if he is just looking for just having tons of content to run through, then, yeah, PS3. I mean, it has an entire, I don't know how many, 7-year game library to go through. So,
yeah. You know.
Right.
And like I said, I wouldn't worry too much about the PS3 being made obsolete if PS Now comes along, because, I don't know, that it should work. But, I mean, how long have they been talking about Gaikai, John?
Long time. I mean,
are we going to be on Gaikai E3 number 3?
Yeah, and well, I mean, that's the thing. It kind of remains to be seen, like, how well that's going to work, right? I think that's one of the big question marks, sort of, that people are kind of skeptical about Sony. It's like, okay, so PS Now sounds cool, but when you really get that out into the field, how is it actually going to work?
And what's the pricing model going to be? Mm-hmm. I mean, it it could be real ridiculous. You know, how are they going to charge these games? What's going to be available at launch?
Yeah.
How well is it going to work?
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, the PS3 has way more certainty.
Yeah. And you're not going to own any of them, of course, if you're streaming.
Yeah, and I mean, I mean, perhaps with PS Now, they'll kind of take the route of Xbox Live and start charging you $10 more a month for PS Now if you add it on to your PS Plus subscription. You don't know these things.
Yeah.
You know?
And I will say, JC, if you go right now, you can go buy Yakuza 5, and you drive a taxi, so you're good to go.
Wow.
I don't understand that series. I don't understand that series at all.
Done and done.
All right, so I have the next question. Simon from Wales writes, "Hello, team. With Nintendo getting a lot of criticism over the handling of the Virtual Console and the slow trickle of releases, I got to thinking how little of a splash the addition of gamepad support for Wiimote got. This essentially solves the Virtual Console trickle by allowing the current Wii Virtual Console library to be played off TV play, all for the price of the inconvenience of Wii Mode and not being able to use the gamepad to control them. Save states are also obviously missing, but now most of the NES library is released. The SNES onward have some save support built into the games. So my question is, do Nintendo need to re-release the game specifically for Wii U, or would their resources be better focused on optimizing the Wiimote experience, i.e. get the gamepad working as the controller for Virtual Console games, and working on yet unsupported platforms rather than retreading old ground? I certainly wouldn't see the need to update my N64 VC games if you could control them with the gamepad. Sorry for the long question, and keep up the good work."
Well, that's the thing, right? Like, if you're content just playing games in Wii mode, you know, games that you've already purchased, then you're not giving Nintendo your money, and that's what they want.
It's true. I don't want to make this too easy for you.
The Virtual Console situation right now doesn't work. It doesn't look like anyone is happy with it, not even Nintendo, because they seem to be stalling, releasing most of their games. Mario 3 still, you know, is coming next month after being promised in the first quarter of 2014. It's only coming next month. Like, not even Nintendo is in a hurry to release their classics, much less third parties. And I think it has a lot to do with the whole $1 to upgrade an NES game and $1.50 to upgrade a Super Nintendo game. I don't know where the split is with third parties, but it doesn't look like, you know, like third parties think that they would be fairly compensated for updating their titles. We got a couple of Super Nintendo games and Nintendo games from third parties on the Wii U Virtual Console, but while Nintendo still releases Mario 3 at the same time on the 3DS and the Wii U eShop, recently Hudson only released Adventure Island 2 on the 3DS. And I think that just shows that, you know, like they think that they're going to make a lot more money there that way, and that the Wii U is not even, you know, worthy of consideration.
Maybe an over extreme analysis of what the thought process is, but I think ultimately there's some kernel to, we have more potential sales on 3DS, so let's focus on that instead of the console.
Well, it's probably more suited to kind of what they would consider bite size entertainment, whereas probably the Wii U is seen as being more suited towards kind of
dust collection.
Well.
Sorry,
kind of like event games of some sort that, you know, that are worthy of the extra sort of the full treatment.
I really think it's a question of money, because Nintendo has a lot of 3DS platforms out there. They have fewer Wii U platforms out there, but like they seem to have a hard time convincing anyone, like smaller indie developers, to develop even for the 3DS. While Sony has very few Vitas out there, very few PlayStation 4 for now out there, a lot of PS3s, of course, and they have no trouble convincing developers, like, yeah, sure, develop this title for the PS4 and the PS3 and the Vita and sell it all for $10. Yeah, sure, cross-platform, like, we're going to make it worth your while, and they're doing it. Whereas, you know, like, Nintendo has a large user base, at least on the 3DS, and they can't seem to convince anyone to put their games on there. So,
I mean, I don't know that it's that dire on 3DS. There are, we do get games every week. They're not, it's not an explosive number of titles. But I mean we do get 2 to 3 games a week come that are digital only games on 3DS. It's not, I mean, a lot of them are My Exotic Farm, but
selling for $20.
All right, that's the end of the episode. I need to go drink. But it's, you're right in the sense that we spoke to, trying to remember who we spoke to. I want to say it was a developer at Z-Boy Games about a year ago, and he was talking about the ease of putting games on Vita and the fact that essentially you walk away with so much of the money that comes in that while they accept that there will be less sales, I mean, it's not a theoretical statement, it is an absolute, there will be less sales, there, the initial investment is lower comparatively and the potential return is higher. Yeah, they do have a problem there with 3DS. I do wonder, with respect to the Wii U, though, they have the Nintendo Framework stuff, and I can't remember if the Nintendo Framework is supposed to work on 3DS or not. I want to say it doesn't, or it was not currently available.
Right.
But we're just now starting to see games that run Nintendo Framework come into being. I mean, then inherently those aren't going to be, at least so far, they're not going to be super complicated games. Because they're built on HTML5 engines. I mean, obviously they've added Unity support as well, so you could probably take things a little step further there. But again, people have to make those games, as you point out. To the point of the Virtual Console, though, I find it real curious that they put gamepad display support out there for Wii U or for Wii, and just said, "All right, that's it, we're done," and didn't attempt to implement the controls. It doesn't make sense, I'll be honest.
Well, as we theorized, it must have been really easy to put to display on the gamepad and less easy to actually use the controls. So that's where they stopped. Like, they really weren't willing to put any effort in it. So they did the bare minimum, I guess.
I just wonder if now when we get the scene when I read it, I kind of wonder if doing that, even though it is technically doing something, is ultimately self-defeating. It makes things worse rather than better, because it stands out as being so ridiculous. I mean, maybe that's being overly negative. I don't know.
Like, what you mean, just having to use another controller to play a game on the gamepad?
It just comes out as so preposterous at that point that maybe it's better if just wasn't said.
Yeah, like it's the guy behind the guy behind the guy just to play the game.
The whole configuration reaches a point where it's so close to being self-parody that I'm not sure that it isn't.
Yeah, like, people don't even understand the gamepad itself, so throwing a Wii remote in there on top of that might confuse the whole message even more.
I mean, there are buttons on the face of the thing. Why can't I use those?
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
It's I don't know. I mean, I think, To the question specifically, let's say you could control your Virtual Console library with the buttons on the gamepad, and you could play them on the gamepad. Putting aside questions of Nintendo not wanting it to be too convenient for you, because then you might not pay for the upgrade, would you be content to have to go into Wii mode to play them?
Yeah, that's the thing. I think I would want some sort of shortcut for all those games. You know, at
which
point
they've basically just made a release for the Wii U.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's sort of a, I think they've put themselves squarely in a no man's land.
Yeah, and the thing is, with the Virtual Console, the Wii's Virtual Console, you still have all the limitations of the Wii with its the fridge, the the fridge cleaning, which is not ideal. You know, like, you have, so you, when you're playing a Wii Virtual Console game on the Wii U, not only do you have to start in Wii mode or go to Wii mode, but then you have to go into the SD card and find the game there and then copy it or play the game from the SD card. It's a double inception. It's really, it's not user friendly, not at all. And I'm not sure who out there bothers to do that, you know, other than people who really, well, people like us, maybe. Well, people like me, I don't know about you guys.
I still play my Wii Virtual Console games on my Wii because I can't be bothered.
Yeah.
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 It's much simpler.
It's certainly much less ridiculous. Simpler is relative. I do kind of wonder. I mean, we talk about the trickle of Wii Virtual Console games, or Wii Virtual Console games, excuse me. I do kind of wonder if they even I know we've asked this as a rhetorical before, but as a serious question, do we think they even care about the Wii Virtual Console right now?
It seemed like the sales data for the Wii Virtual Console, those Virtual Console games were only selling to people who were getting the Wii, right? Mm-hmm. It kind of, like the graphs, whatever, like showed that people got a Wii, visited the Wii shop, got a couple of games, then never went back there again. And when the sales of the Wii started slowing down, the sales of the Virtual Console also slowed down greatly. They've never really managed to properly convince people to go back to the shop and keep buying games. And they've really done a bad job just making it a selling point, right? Making selling the games, convincing people to give games, you know, old games that they've never played before a shot. You know, they just throw away a description in a press release that no one reads. And the description was, you know, not particularly convincing. I think that if I had been them, I would have been, you know, like in the description for Pulseman, I would have been like, this is by the people who made Pokemon. And like, that's how you would sell the game, right? But I don't think there was
this is Pokemon.
Yeah, basically. But no, like
this is Pokemon. Just don't ask questions about it.
Yeah, it's almost like these games just kind of are shipped over from some foreign country, like, you know,
they
Japan.
Are,
well,
Japan.
They are.
But I'm just saying, games that were made in the West. I'm just saying, like, it's like they just kind of arrive in the mail, and it's sort of like, okay, these are the games for this week. Write something up about it.
It feels a little bit like when you sign up for like the Cheese of the Week Club, and you just get something random every week. And you're like, well, I don't want this.
Cheese of the Week Club.
But this is what I get.
I don't know what kind of clubs you're a part of, James. But
there you go.
But I'll buy that explanation.
Google it. I'm not going to deal with this.
I think we're in different social classes, James.
That's right.
I mean, it's definitely an afterthought of Nintendo. I mean, mm-hmm. it's something where they see it's like, okay, I can get like a couple dollars here and there, so it's worth it. And if it goes away, then everyone's going to be just pissed, even if they didn't use it, just because people like having the option.
Right.
But just the lack of effort and any kind of, you know, pushing towards it, it really just feels like they're looking for some change. I'm just like, eh.
Yeah.
Let's get a couple dollars here and there.
They need someone passionate to run the Virtual Console, and they don't seem to have found that person. Like it really feels like the people in charge of Virtual Console don't care.
It's like a factory.
And it blows my mind. Like, yeah, like it's like, why not get a passionate person? They usually work for cheap, so, you know, like there's no downside.
Yeah, I'm just picturing there's like this list of like games they were remembering, no particular order of like, oh yeah, put that down there. Oh yeah, stick that on there. And that arbitrary list is just how they're releasing it, and there's just some really sad department down at Nintendo, and that's all they do. It's like, well, what's next on the list? Okay, let's put that on there.
Yeah.
I can't fathom the GBA thing that they've got coming out. GBA games. Is GBA games on Wii U next week?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Over the next month or so, I think.
And then they announced DS games for Wii U, which is still just completely weird and makes no sense. Absolutely, completely counterintuitive to any kind of logic. They are putting portable games on the console Virtual Console, but they're not putting console games on the console Virtual Console. This is going on the 3DS Virtual Console.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't understand this company.
Yeah,
I don't.
Everything with VC has been one-offs, massive gaps in content, inexplicable games chosen.
Inexplicable platforms chosen.
Yeah, it's a mess. It's always been a mess. It's still a mess.
They went on that Neo Geo kick for a while.
That was great.
Nobody was waiting for Samurai Showdown 4.
That was awesome. And don't forget the fact that there's like 3 Commodore 64 games out there. Just in case.
There were like 12.
Just in case you want to get them.
There were 12 and then they pulled them all.
Yeah.
It's bizarro land.
It's all over the place, yeah.
I really, actually, think about it. They really are putting the console games on 3DS and the mobile games on Wii U. It's it's like the Mad Hatter's Tea Party. I mean, I don't understand. It really confuses everything that I get as a company. I don't want to think about it. It hurts.
Yeah.
So yeah, it would be lovely if I could play them on the gamepad and press buttons, but ultimately I would like to be able to just play them natively and not have to drill through the stupid Wii menu and buried in the Wii U. Which at the time we called as such the most ridiculous cop out ever to begin with. Little did we know what was coming. So well played. So Guillaume's got the next email.
Mm-hmm. So Leo writes, I read Neil's article, Why Wii U Needs Nintendo Pennant Chase Baseball, and it got me thinking. Nintendo just announced that they are going to be farming out their IPs more frequently, like Hyrule Warriors. I played the heck out of NBA Street Volume 3 on my GameCube. That game rocked. Nintendo let EA put Mario, Luigi, and Peach in that game. And the Beastie Boys. Maybe, I don't think it was up to Nintendo, though.
Oh my god.
Maybe they just need to go to EA and offer Nintendo characters again. What if they decided to forego paying the licensing fees for LeBron James, Peyton Manning, etc., and EA did entire sports games just on the Wii U 3DS? We could have Mario Madden, Donkey Kong Street Basketball, or Luigi Live View 3D, think NBA Live.
No.
And instead of doing what Mario Strikers did to soccer, although I enjoy that game, just have them take the existing sports games they already make and replace the names and faces and logos with Nintendo names, faces, and logos. Done. It will only cost a little more than a port costs, but no licensing fees with the NFL or NBA, and you get the Nintendo characters to help it sell. What about Star Fox Jam / Blitz? In the vein of NBA Jam or NFL Blitz. If EA says no, go to 2K and offer 2KD... This is tough. 2KDK Basketball Football. I had a ton of fun playing NBA 2K13 on my Wii U, so if 2K Sports changed names, faces, and logos for the entire spectra of Nintendo IP, but it was the same game, I'd buy it without hesitation.
Whew.
That was tough to read. I'm tired.
It's a lot of words.
I think that if the deal with EA to put Nintendo characters in NBA Street and what was the it's been so long, SSX?
It was
SSX 4.
No, it was a street. Wasn't it their soccer game, I want to say?
There was NBA Street and there was also SSX on tour.
Oh, okay.
So if that had been profitable, I think that would have, kept going. So I think probably EA is not too interested in doing that again.
I don't know that just swapping out the characters really would make much sense.
Yeah,
I think it worked in NBA Street because it just came off as being real preposterous and it was kind of a side thing. It was just sort of there for laughs. Yeah. If you were going to try to do a full palette swap of all the characters, I think you'd need to recreate. Well, in some cases, you would have to recreate arenas because those are licensed locations. But I mean, you'd have to create arenas in the proper vein. And at that point, you're starting to push back towards Strikers. Even if you just kept it as a much more conservative gameplay style, I think you're still really pushing your development costs up. At which point, maybe it's worth just considering building your own game. I know I get the appeal of playing super, a relatively realistic sports game with the Nintendo characters versus the normal sports frenzy chaos games that they normally come out with. Mario Tennis, where your ball is fireballs and there's piranha plants and stuff, versus an actual tennis game. I just don't know that the appeal is there for the average player who would be enticed by seeing Mario on the cover of a soccer game.
Yeah, they would expect the crazy different Nintendo things and then get bored.
And then it's team roster management. I kind of like the idea of being able to play as Mario in a super serious NBA game, if only because it's ridiculous,
right?
And would look stupid.
You'd have to jump really high.
Well, it's good. It's what he's good at. It's just, I want it because it looks stupid.
Oh my god! And I'm just picturing every time he jumps high, you hear like the ding, noise, whatever it is.
Well, I'm imagining more him landing on real world players, and that's the end of it. It's the appeal. The appeal is intrinsically linked with how stupid it would all look.
Yeah.
It's, and I say that endearingly stupid. I mean, just incredibly silly. If you saw the Mario characters in NBA Street, which obviously Leo did because he played the heck out of the game. It, I mean, NBA Street was already a really ridiculous looking game because it was sure. It was supposed to be arcadey. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can tell from the name. It was supposed to be this kind of silly take on basketball, kind of akin to NBA Jam, but not as showy and extreme. Mm-hmm. But even then, once you put the Mario characters in, it turned into this carnival of absurdity that made everything just seem completely off the wall. And if you remove the normal-ish looking players, I think you lose the anchor that makes the game make any sense at all.
What about taking a possibly cheaper route and just go with what Tekken Tag Tournament 2 did and just have the regular players have, you know, Nintendo-themed outfits? Then you wouldn't have you wouldn't have to redo the animations or anything like that. Like, you would still have the expectation of a Madden character just moving like players move in Madden, right? But they would just look absurd with the Donkey Kong helmet or, you know, whatever.
I just don't know that that's going to... I mean, would anybody here buy a sports game they weren't planning on buying because you can dress up?
No.
You know? Yeah.
No.
I think that's the problem.
That's the thing. I think that Leo mentioned Madden in passing, but I think this whole thing would only work really in very, very arcadey sports games in the first place.
Yeah, with small teams as well. That's why it works for basketball, because you can have a small roster of characters. It wouldn't work for football just because...
You have to come up with 42 characters.
Well, yeah,
like that.
Yeah. I mean, and the way the game of football works,
your
is
seventh palette swap of Toadette is your offensive line. Right?
Well, I don't. I mean, also you
I
have
don't
like
need that.
You know, you have offenses. You know, against a defense, and it's the interaction of the multiple characters or multiple players on either one of those teams. You know, it's not just like LeBron James versus, you know, Kevin Durant or something like that. Like, there's not that one-on-one sort of thing
right.
in it. It's like, it's a complex interaction between all of these players. And so what are you going to do? Have like, you know, three different Toads all with different stats? Like, it's just, it doesn't make any sense.
Well, that's...
Yellow Toad's got up, son.
Yeah, that's kind of what they did with Mario, what was it? Slugfest?
Yep.
Because, you know, like up until then, you know, Mario Tennis, Mario Golf, there wasn't really a problem there. But with Strikers, I think it's, again, smaller teams and they're all different characters, right? But then you got Slugfest and you were playing against a team of Shy Guys. They're all the same. And you're playing against a team of them. It was much less appealing.
Yeah.
And baseball especially is... Although it's team versus team, it's still a one-on-one sport.
Oh, yeah.
It's it's hitter versus pitcher.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm imagining what a Mario football game would look like, and why would you not just make Bowser your running back and give him the ball every time? He weighs many thousands of pounds. I mean, at what point does,
he's all
does
spiky.
He get... Yeah, yep. I mean, how do you realistically, and I say this knowing we're talking about a Mario football game, realism is not tremendously vital to this conversation,
yeah.
But how would you realistically stop him? I mean, what conceit would the game put in front of you to let you tackle him in a conventional manner?
Yeah.
It would have to be something
superpowers,
ridiculous.
Yeah. Power-ups of some sort.
It's almost a prerequisite in order to be able to accomplish the task in front of you. Unless they just say, well, Bowser can't be your running back because.
Yeah.
Well, you know, sometimes Bowser is a story tall and sometimes he fits in a go-kart. So
it's true.
There's the way there.
Yeah, you know, I mean, just let him have the go-kart then and just do that. Mario 3-on-3 go-karts.
Nice.
I like the crossovers in general. I mean, I've obviously the most successful example was putting Link in Soul Calibur 2. But it worked there for a couple different reasons, not just because it was, I mean, physically he works as a character in that universe just because of how he's built. Mm-hmm. But I think visually he kind of worked there. He certainly worked better than putting Heihachi in, which he was the same art style. It made no sense because he didn't use weapons. it was a weird decision. It was a weird time at Namco.
It was. Dark days.
Or putting in Spawn, which is even weirder. That was a weird exclusive.
Spawn is like the go-to guy for like random, you know, surprise character. Yeah. He really is.
But it didn't really improve afterwards, right? Soul Calibur 4 had Yoda and Darth Vader.
It did.
And the Apprentice from The Force Unleashed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was weird. I mean, it's... 5 got rid of all of that stuff, but it's still, I mean, it's, you know, I kind of missed the goofiness of it all.
Mm-hmm.
I did wonder what kinds of games it would be putting cameo characters in there would tremendously influence the sales numbers. It's hard to think of an example where that is viable with the Wii U platform in the current state it's in. You'd probably first have to convince the publisher to even put the game on the Wii U.
Right.
I think for Tekken Tag Tournament, I'm a little surprised that game came out still. I mean, I know porting from the Xbox isn't a tremendously complicated
Right, process. And it was before the launch of the Wii U, so they didn't know.
Sure. They couldn't have known.
Yeah.
They could have. We all kind of saw it coming, but it's I think it would really only work with the right combination of character and universe they're trying to put it in. And I think Street Volume 3 worked really well because that game was already really silly.
Yeah, you can't force something in there that like totally is something jarring to the experience. It's not gonna sell more of the game. It's more of just a little like, you know, just chuckle for the person who bought it and for them to just like the game even more and continue to like the series. I don't see it affecting anybody's sales numbers, and if you push it too far, it destroys the game because you're like, well, I wanted, you know, whatever X game is in the first place.
Right. I bought this game. I didn't buy Mario game.
Yep. And it kind of gets old after a while, too. It's like, okay, having these Nintendo characters in there. If you keep doing that game after game after game, eventually the novelty wears off.
And then it paints a really bad picture for, like, you know, something like the Wii U, where it's like, okay, are all the games now just going to be Mario games somehow?
Need for Speed Mario mix? I mean...
And why step there are two Mario, Assassin's Mario, and... Yeah. Let's not open that box.
Mario. I do kind of want that actually. That sounds...
Mario Theft Auto.
That sound like that goes back to the right mix of stupid and amazing.
It has to be really, really hardcore. Like,
yeah, I want him dropping in on Italian city states,
killing popes.
Oh,
Guillaume went there.
Guillaume brings the heresy. Perfect.
Well, no, Assassin's Creed went there.
Yeah. You kill a pope. Spoiler.
Good job by you, everybody.
Not like it hasn't happened in history before, so.
It has. Exactly. It's fine.
We have historical precedent on our side. I don't even really know what that means in the context of this podcast, but whatever.
That Mario has killed popes, I think is what you're arguing here.
Is that our show for this week?
I think that's our show for this
week. Yeah, I think Mario killing a pope is a good note to go out on.
Yep, it's always the place to go. So, before we wrap up, I wanted to go ahead and announce the winner for retroactive number 30, which was the Wi-Fi connection Bon Voyage edition.
The Wi-Fi connection, maybe?
Boo! Boo! God! Anyway, it's freaking GoldenEye 007. Thanks, John. You ruined it for me. It was tight voting, but ultimately GoldenEye won the day. So we will be playing that online. You can check the site for announcements about when we will be available to play it, because our plan is to play it with all of you. We did a Wi-Fi night for Nintendo World Report for GoldenEye roughly about the time it came out. It was actually quite a lot of fun. So hopefully we'll be able to have one more go of that. It'll probably be a couple weeks before we're ready to talk about it on the show. So obviously we'd encourage everybody who gets the opportunity to try the game out online, especially if you've played the game but never got to try out the Wi-Fi connection stuff. It of the choices we had, it's one of the more serviceable applications of the Wi-Fi connection. So, like I said, check the site. We'll have some news for that. Again, if you want to send us an email for the site, it's it's rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. All right. So that's going to do it for this week. I want to thank Kim for filling in for us in Johnny's place.
Anytime.
And I want to thank these two for showing up this week.
Hey,
don't mention it.
I want to thank Guillaume for showing up this week. John, whatever.
Next week, who knows? Let's see if I'll go for four in a row. Why not?
Oh.
Maybe?
Jesus.
The world holds its
breath.
Yeah,
I'm not going to get crazy about it. Enjoy the three. That's all I can say for now.
And with that, good night.
Bye.
Later.
See ya.